What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Friar Faithful Chronicle podcast. I'm your host, Deegs, and today we have a special guest on the show, welcoming in Trevor Huth of Gaslamp Ball and several other publications. Trevor, how's it going, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Hanging in there. I know we're both kind of struggling right now. You're sick and I'm really tired, but we're going to grind through the podcast here, talk a lot about some Padres prospects and stuff. Before we jump into this real quick, Trevor, why don't you tell the people listening to the podcast a little bit about yourself, maybe where they can find you on Twitter, what work you do, just some basic information about Trevor Huth.
Yeah, I blog for, pretty much every site on the internet at this point, and you can find me at Huth Trevor, HOTHTREVOR on Twitter. I am with Gaslamp Ball for the moment. The whole new California independent worker debacle is changing that, but I'm also a Gaslamp Ball writing about the Tigers. Prospects Live, pitcher list, doing a lot of mostly audio editing stuff at those places, but also write football at the Seahawks Wire. So I'm all over the place.
Yeah, dude, you're definitely getting your money's worth in terms of writing. But all right, so we're going to kind of break this up into two parts. The first part's going to be some Padres talk. We're going to talk about just briefly highlighting some of the moves the Padres have made on the big league side of things. And then we'll jump into some prospects, which is definitely what I'm excited to talk to you about. So as an outside guy who, you know, isn't a Padres fan, obviously you support the Detroit Tigers for some reason. Give me your thoughts on, like, all the moves the Padres have made, you know, the Tingler hire, you know, the Drew Pomeranz signing, going out and getting Jerickson Profar literally 5 hours before he was going to get non-tendered, and obviously the big one being the Grisham and Davies trade and the acquisition of Tommy Pham. So just kind of give me your thoughts on all these moves, if you think they make the Padres better or worse entering 2020, or, you know, for what reasons and then what not you think.
Well, the Tigers thing is more just I like being unhappy, I guess. But
yeah.
The Padres, there was – I mean, I liked the Tingler hire for as much as managers are going to, I think, be affecting the game. I think going out and getting Tingler and moving towards that young manager with the young team and the analytics and all that stuff. I mean, I think Tingler was a good hire. I was in the camp of I didn't see what was going so wrong with Green. I'm sure you can enlighten me if you want, but the Tingler hire was good in my opinion. The Pomeranz move, a lot of people saw it as positive. I didn't really have an opinion either way on it. I mean, he should be decent out of the bullpen, which is something that will help the Padres, something they really need. The Profar move I absolutely hated, but I'll circle back around to that. I like Trent Grisham, and Zach Davies is fine. He'll be a solid arm to have, but I think Grisham's a really good get. And Pham brings more to the team than Hunter Renfro. I know I'm not going that deep, but Pham was an okay move. That one was a non-starter for me. I mean, if you can lose – my takeaway from the Tommy Pham trade is if you can lose Xavier Edwards and still have the farm system that the Padres do, then you're doing pretty well as far as building building up a farm. But Profar, I'm hitting you with hot takes today, I promise. So yeah. Profar bugs me because I've been saying since the end of last season that Owen Miller should be starting second base on opening day.
I agree. I totally agree.
And so with Profar, Owen Miller's really not probably going to be able to do that. They'll start him at AAA, and I don't think Profar is a guy that they're going to be forced to hold on to necessarily if you have other guys that are ready, Esteban Quiroz or Owen Miller or somebody. But I wanted Owen Miller to be the opening day second baseman.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Profar deal, it's not more of who they lost in the deal, because I personally don't think that Austin Allen or your favorite outfield prospect of all time, Buddy Reed, is really going to – like, I don't think they're going to be – like major league impact bats or even major league impact players for that reason. But I really wanted them to give either Esteban Quiroz or Owen Miller at least a shot to start on opening day. You know, when it comes down to the Tommy Pham trade, I was super down on Hunter Renfro. I just didn't think he was really ever going to be anything more than a power guy that's going to hit maybe 30 home runs at max in a platoon role with a ton of strikeouts, low OBP. He was terrible last year against lefties. He can only hit lefties. He was terrible against righties. And I think that Tommy Pham is kind of a big get for this team because what they were terrible at last year and have been terrible at for the last 5 years or probably decade for that matter is getting on base. Like they've been in the bottom of the league literally every single year and getting on base for as long as I can remember. So there's clearly a trend here when it comes to Profar, Grisham, and Pham. Those are all guys that offer some kind of, you know, presence and stability at the box. Another reason why I like the Tommy Pham trade that I want to get your thoughts on are, Jake Cronenworth. Do you have any thoughts on Jake Cronenworth bringing him in, coming over? Some guys, you know, at Prospects Live, especially because we're both colleagues there, are extremely high on Jake Cronenworth. So if you have a take on that, I would love to hear it, just to hear your thoughts on what he brings to the Padres.
I don't know that I have a huge take. I know that he's a potential two-way guy, so I'm kind of interested there. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what he does. He was, in AAA last year?
Yeah,
going to be spewing his Fangraphs page, but he 406 plate appearances, had 447 weighted runs created plus. So, I mean, here clearly he can play with the bat. I don't know what his pitching looks like. I don't know much about the guy. I didn't even know he was a two-way prospect until the trade, if I'm being honest. So, he never seemed like somebody that I really should brush up on, but 7 innings, 11 strikeouts in AAA, or 11 strikeouts per 9 in AAA. But it'll be interesting. I'm curious as to how they're going to use him.
Yeah, I think he's probably – I mean, I think his calling card to the big leagues – because I didn't really know much about him either, to be honest, until that trade happened. And then a bunch of people in that Prospects 365 Dynasty League were, like, super hyped that Jake Cronenworth was going to the Padres. But his hit tool, I think, is obviously the what's going to take him to the big leagues. He's a left-handed hitting second baseman. Personally, I've heard a lot of people rave about his defense, so I don't know if like he's going to be like a super good defender at second base, but that's just what I've heard. He's definitely more of a bat than an arm, but I guess he's been up to like 96 on the bump with a nasty curveball and actually like broke Michigan's save record his like junior year or something. So definitely a guy that's going to be super intriguing. I'm kind of surprised that it took the Rays, an organization that intelligent and that that willing to do crazy stuff like that, until he got to AAA to let him pitch. But I don't know. We'll see what the Padres do. They have a history of doing this kind of stuff with guys. You know, they had a catcher a couple years ago that Christian Bethencourt. They threw like 100 miles an hour, and they made him a reliever. And then Javi Guerra obviously converted shortstop, but now those like 100 miles an hour. So we'll see what they do with Cronenworth. But let's move on to the bread and butter of this episode, man. We'll go on to the prospects. I don't want to highlight, you know, Goran Patino too much because those are the guys that everyone talks about. And I feel like sometimes hearing the same people talk about the same guys over and over and over again gets really annoying and repetitive. But in 30 seconds, I want you to give me realistic takes on what you think Gore and Patino can be separately. So what's their ceiling? Do you think Mackenzie Gore could be one of the best pitchers in baseball one day? Is Luis Patino right there with him? I really want to hear your thoughts.
Gore, yes. I don't know that Patino's necessarily, you know, right there, up there being a best pitcher in baseball next to him. I'm not saying he's not a, you know, good pitcher, have a bright future by any means, but Gore is one of the few guys in baseball that really, with the ace level ceiling gets thrown around a lot, but he's one that people tend to agree on that he's got that kind of ceiling, which is awesome considering he, you get a lefty pitcher who can do things like that. It's pretty good. He's, you know, I mean, I'm not going to spew stats. We all know what Mackenzie Gore can do. He's a talented pitcher, but if realistic expectation, yeah, I think he's up there. At his ceiling, probably could be a very good level ace. I always kind of seen Patino as a ceiling two, probably more like a three kind of guy. But he's still, I mean, electric stuff, really, really good. So I think that's kind of why I can settle with him confident saying a three guy, but obviously can elevate to a two. And then you have a 1-2 punch of Gore and Patino add in with Paddock, and the pitching is going to be really good one of these days.
Yeah, hopefully it comes sooner rather than later, because we've had a lot of below average pitching for the last decade or so. But a guy we were talking about last night on Twitter, DMing each other, Taylor Trammell. You said you wanted to highlight Taylor Trammell, talk about some things you saw from what he came over in that trade, obviously, for Franmil Reyes, Trevor Bauer, and Logan Allen. So give me your thoughts on Taylor Trammell, what you've seen when you watch the Sod Poodles. And I want to hear a realistic ceiling for Taylor Trammell, because I feel like a lot of people are conflicted on him. Some people think he could be an everyday all-star. Others think that, you know, it's just a name now. So give me your thoughts on Padres outfielder Taylor Trammell.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with Trammell is you're going to find the same reason that I, quote-unquote, have Buddy Reed as my favorite outfield prospect ever. I really like athletic outfielders, and I'm not really sure. It's hard for me not to just, you know, stay on them and be high on them. And that's Trammell. I mean, he's an athletic outfielder. And it's, you know, you read about him. I do way too much reading on prospects, which might skew my thoughts on a lot of guys. But he's been tweaking stuff with a swing. He changed his approach at the beginning of the year. And then he wasn't really seeing many dividends. He was down, not playing well. And then he got traded, and I was very interested to watch what happens from game one and moving into the rest of the season with his swing and how he approaches it. He was playing, you know, in Amarillo, and one of the immediate things is you could see a change in his stance. I'm trying to remember, it's been so long since I actually talked to somebody about this, but he's kind of moved his hands, I think, and that's really helped him get a more direct pass to the ball, and I think he's also potentially standing a little bit more upright too, which is also helpful. But he's just – the Padres are doing things with his swing, and I think that it's really helping him. We saw him explode at the end of the year. He had the – was it a walk-off?
The Grand Slam,
if I'm not mistaken. So I titled a post at towards the end of that MILB season that Taylor Trammell is allowing us to dream, and I'm all for it, man. I think that he could be an all-star caliber outfielder still.
Yeah, speaking back to what you're talking about, the hands and everything, there's a really good picture on Twitter that Ray Butler at Prospects 365 put out of like an actual visual representation of what Trammell was doing with his hand. With his hand placement prior to the trade and after the trade, and you can clearly see what he's doing, keeping his hands back, allowing them to fire through the zone and take that clear bat path you were talking about. So, I do too, man. I love toolsy athletic outfielders, because with Taylor Trammell, the tools are definitely there. I mean, if he puts it all together, he's going to be an everyday all-star. I love athletic outfielders. I love guys who play with their heart out and show personality on an every game basis like Trammell does. Does the arm concern you? Because a lot of people talk about how it is a below average to potentially average arm. Do you think he could stick in center field long term, or is this a guy that the Padres are probably gonna have to turn into some uber athletic, incredibly good defender in left field?
The arm doesn't really necessarily concern me that much. I think he can stick in center. You know, you can't have it all, I guess, but that'll just be something that is seen. I really haven't, noticed too much, at least with the arm, that's bugging me enough to where I'm like, he needs to be moved out of center field, because I think he's the Padres' future plan at center field.
Yeah, I think at the current moment he is too. And there's a lot of guys that can get away with it. You know, Manuel Margot, for example, is a guy who has a fairly below average arm, in my opinion, and he's a really good quality defensive outfielder. Same thing with Lorenzo Cain. So if you can get it done with the glove, I don't think the arm matters too much. Let's move on to a guy that the Padres took sixth overall in this past draft, in CJ Abrams. lot of people weren't really sure if this was a quality pick at draft time. Obviously, Abrams has shown that since then he was definitely worth the selection. Absolutely tearing up the Arizona Rookie League, skipping short season ball, going into the Midwest League in his draft year, and then only playing in one game before going down to injury. But what have you seen from C.J. Abrams? What do you think that is his ultimate ceiling? Because the trade of Xavier Edwards likely means that the Padres are putting all their chips in on this guy being their second baseman of the future.
Yeah, he's another really good athlete. He's got that. I mean, he could be a 2020 guy, I think. I mean, he's got power. He's got speed. Yeah. So I don't think 2020 is necessarily that ridiculous. The speed, I think, will play a little more. The 20 power, I think, is more – 20 home runs is more at his ceiling. I think the speed will be 20 bags fairly easily, if not close to 30. But, in talking to somebody who didn't actually like the pick of Abrams, I asked him – I was just curious because I thought that you're getting a solid – maybe hyped up, but a solid, shortstop out of high school. And he said that it's just kind of a lot of could be's around C.J. Abrams. And he might have proved a little bit of that coming out and finding so much success, but also said high school bat. Those early successes with high school bats worry me. Think Nolan Gorman for the Cardinals, where he came and burst onto the scene, and now he's kind of struggled at each new level he's faced. Not that I think Abrams is at a higher level than Nolan Gorman was, but just in that mindset of it's a high school bet, you need to not throw all your chips in because of a good draft year. But Abrams is a good pick. I'm kind of in on him. I think his hit tool and speed combo with a little bit of pop is going to be a good thing. And if he really can find that ceiling and get to the top, I think you're talking about a 2020 guy.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I would have been a little bit more hesitant, just like you were talking about throwing all your chips in on a draft guy, especially a prep bat like this. But, they do have a ton of depth at second base and up the middle in the organization as we speak right now. Owen Miller, Gabriel Arias, which is a guy that we'll talk about in a little bit. Tucapita Marcano's down there too. So before we jump into kind of rounding out the consensus top 10 guys in this system, let's talk a little bit about Luis Camposano, because this is a guy that the Padres, we've had several reports come out from beat writers and such saying that they desperately want to upgrade the catcher position, and that the Preller is okay with moving on from both Austin Hedges and Francisco Mejia, mostly in part to the fact that they have Luis Camposano a year or two away. So what are your thoughts on Camposano? I know you have a pretty hot take coming on him, and I'm kind of fired up to hear it, to be honest with you.
I think you're closer to 2 years, if not maybe more, with Camposano as far as ETA. But you watch a video of his swing. I adore his swing, his approach. I mean, you go through the numbers. I mean, what's so great about him is that his his walk numbers and strikeout numbers aren't too far apart. I mean, he was 10.7% walk percentage and 11.7 strikeout percentage at advanced A, and that kind of that's love absurd. That. He's got good bat to ball skills, obviously, is where that's going. And my hot take is that in 5 or 6 years, I think Camposano will be the best offensive catcher in the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, you put a skill set like that on a catcher of all time, of all positions, for a guy that can absolutely 100% stick behind the plate. I mean, the stuff we've seen from him defensively has been really good. An above average arm, really good defender, calls a good game. But then you put a bat in his hand and he can definitely, control his approach, walk a little bit, doesn't swing and miss a lot. There's some raw power in there. If you've ever seen a picture of Luis Camposano, he looks like he could probably squat 450 pounds with no problem. Do you think that double A, because he was decent in the Midwest League. He was like a 270 bat. And then he got up to the Cal League, which is a hitter-friendly league, and he kind of tore it up. So do you think that this next year at Double A, if he has a good offensive year, is he locked and loaded as a top two, top three catching prospect in all of baseball in your eyes?
Absolutely. I mean, as you can tell by my take, he already is there in my eyes. But with, you know, with Bart and Rutschman, obviously, it's gonna. I don't think he's never gonna be a top two. I don't think between those two guys. But I get excited and fired up like this. But Double A is kind of where a lot of people I've talked to, scouts or otherwise, are saying Double A is where you see the medal and all that stuff. So put more stock when they get to Double A. And higher, so that Double A will be very important to him. And if he can succeed, I think he'll shoot up a lot of lists, not just the catching prospect lists. I mean, he'll find his way into top 100 lists if he's not there already.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So piggybacking off Camposano, a guy who was actually his teammate at Lake Elsinore this year, Gabriel Arias, shortstop. This is a guy who was a super highly touted international prospect coming out of his 2016-2017 J2 class. A guy who a lot of people kind of wrote off after last year. He struggled really bad in the Midwest League in kind of his second pretty much full stint going through that league. So what are your thoughts on Gabriel Arias? This is a guy who had a tremendous year at the plate with Lake Elsinore. Obviously, he's a super impact defender, a guy who, again, just like Camposano, we're definitely going to want to see what he does at AA this year. But I think Gabriel Arias' play this past season kind of put him back on the prospect radar, and I'm very curious to hear what your thoughts on are him.
The first thought I had on Arias is what a lot of people probably do. I like his size.
Yeah, me too.
6'1", 201. And you can hear my voice squeaking up at the top there. But I like his size. His glove definitely plays. He showed more with the bat. He liked that he could, you know, hit 16 home runs. But I don't know. I'm not the highest guy on Arias. I like his glove. I like his size. I think there's something there. I think his glove gives him a higher floor, higher realistic value, but I don't think his ceiling is much higher than what that realistic is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a guy who has kind of been inconsistent in his career. The strikeout percentage and the swinging strikeout rate is really scary. He strikes out at like a 25% clip for his career, if not more. So definitely a guy that I want to see how he reacts to AA pitching. He's still super young. He's only 20 years old. So there's a ton of, you know, still room for him to mature and further develop his baseball skills. But definitely a guy that, you know, with Edwards gone now, you know, he doesn't have the skill set to play second base, but I definitely think the glove is there. He does have an absolute cannon for an arm, so I think that's a disservice to put him at second base. But also a guy who's Rule 5 eligible next year, so if the Padres don't feel like putting him on their 40-man roster, definitely a guy we could see at some point in the season or even now get traded given how high up his stock is. All right, man, that's kind of all the top guys we just highlighted. We're kind of flying through this, so we're going to get to the really interesting part that you know, you talked about on Twitter. We could talk for probably 3 hours about how deep this system is. Let's just kind of bounce this stuff back off each other. Give me some guys that are not like consensus top 30 prospects that you've seen on most Padres top 30 prospect lists that you want to highlight in this very, very deep system.
Well, the first guy that I actually want to talk about is a consensus top 30 prospect. It's more a question. Do you think that they try Hudson Potts at second base just because, I mean, he's been improving. He changed his swing a little bit. I highlighted that as well on Gaslamp. But if his bat comes around, do you think they're going to try him out at second just to find him a place on that infield?
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy, you know, first-round pedigree, a guy that they liked coming out of high school. They did play him at second base a little bit last year. It's kind of like he'd play second base a couple times a week. You know, obviously this was the guy who was their presumed third baseman of the future before a 26-year-old superstar signed with them. But I'm kind of out on Hudson Potts, to be honest with you. I think that there's just – it's kind of a lost cause at this point. Maybe that's kind of ignorant on my part considering the fact that if he puts it all together, that is a true power-hitting threat. So I think they'll definitely give him a chance to prove it just because, you know, the pedigree, the first round, He's still pretty young, and there is some he's showed some good stuff there. So I think he's definitely an option. Yeah.
Yeah. With me, I just like he had he got better as last year went on, and the biggest difference is, and I highlighted this on Gaslamp Ball, but he was kind of diving out over the plate early on in the season, and then all of a sudden he fixed that, and that's when his numbers started to pick up. So I don't think he's a lost cause by any means. I think he's going to keep getting those opportunities. I'd honestly prefer to have Owen Miller playing second base, but I think Potts is an interesting case moving forward.
Yeah, I would definitely take Owen Miller over him. I'd probably give Cronenworth a shot too, just to see what he has. I know that they do like Ty France a lot for some reason, but he's the guy that is also going to get a chance to play there. I'm just talking like in the near future, you know. Obviously, Greg Garcia is still there too. But all right, let's jump into some, you know, guys that are not top 30 guys. Duanio Williams Sutton, guy you mentioned to me specifically name by name on Twitter. Give me your thoughts on the former East Carolina Pirate and what he can be as a prospect.
I am the self-proclaimed William Sutton hype man. I very much enjoy watching him play because, again, he's got that athleticism and he plays the outfield. I don't know what else you need in a prospect. But, no, he just went on tears last season, and then he would be in a massive slump. He was just very inconsistent. When he was on, he was a really, really great hitter in Fort Wayne. And most people who recognize his name recognize him for getting hit however many times in a game. But he can swing the bat too, and I think that he's kind of putting some stuff together. You saw more power this year out of him, I think, than you'd had in years past. And so I'm just a William Sutton fan. He's fun to watch play. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I think there's actually like true raw power in there. He's kind of built like a tank. I mean, really big lower half. He's like 6'2", 6'3", a very physical frame. So I like the power. Obviously, the hit-by-pitch thing. You know, he led the Midwest League in hit-by-pitches last year. So that's kind of interesting, just kind of like a funny coincidental thing. But I definitely think he's a guy that we'll probably see jump into the top 30 here eventually once people start to see him more in the California League and possibly even at Double-A Amarillo within the next two seasons. Another guy that that you wanted to highlight is Ethan Skender, a guy that you have personal ties to. So why don't you tell us about Ethan Skender a little bit?
Yeah, well, Skender's a really interesting case. He was drafted in the 28th round, I want to say in 2016, but it took him a while to actually debut because of very unfortunate circumstances with knee surgeries. So 2019 was actually when he like debuted and started playing, coming off these knee surgeries, and he was solid, good. Good bat to ball team. He was just playing well, and he was fun to watch. And you know, he was coming in as a 28th rounder, so I don't know that there were high expectations anyway. But especially coming off of so many years of knee surgeries, and to come in and in 14 games in the rookie league, get called up to Fort Wayne and be worth 112 weighted runs created plus. I mean, I like Ethan Skender a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a guy that I haven't really paid much attention to, but I like the frame. I like the hit tool. I think he's a guy that that could definitely continue to progress and be something. Is there any other guys that you want to highlight before I jump into something else I want to talk about real quick?
Yes, Junior Perez.
Yeah, this is a guy we talked about a little bit. Give me your Junior Perez takes.
Yes, we talked about this because I was trying to convince you to put him in your top 30 list. Yeah. Once Buddy graduates. He was a guy that I was just scouting stat lines for a while just because he was playing in
DSL.
I can't think right now. My goodness. But he was playing in the Dominican Summer League. But, I mean, he had a great year there. And then I saw a video on him, courtesy of Prospects Live, actually. So shout out to them. And I didn't. I just think he's got a athletic swing. He looked a little weird. The thing that stuck out in the video to me is half the time he used a big leg kick, half the time he didn't, which was a little odd. But I mean, he had 11 home runs, 11 stolen bases in DSL. Like, I think there's something there. I agreed with you. You said that he's got a ceiling probably as a fourth outfielder, but just a really interesting name to watch out for. And I'm interested to see how his swing progresses, because I'm a nerd for mechanics like that.
Yeah, here's the thing with the Padres, right? Every single year they always have a DSL or an international signee prospect that kind of pops out of nowhere. This year for me, it was Omar Cruz, which is a left-hander from Fort Wayne, a guy who kind of like a sturdier, stockier build, but throws a lot of strikes, fills up the zone, changeup's really good. But they have one every single year. Every single year there's a guy that comes out of nowhere and kind of turns himself into a prospect just because of how invested they are in the international market. And I actually think my pick for next year is Junior Perez. So he's a guy that was really close to my top 30 list when we were talking about it. I probably have him at 32 or 33. There are two international guys from this year's class that I have slightly ahead of him. But once he gets stateside and we see him some more, you know, on the complex, potentially even at Tri-City next season, it's a guy that I would definitely pay attention to, because it's a real athlete. I think there's some raw power in there. There are some inconsistencies, but he's still pretty young. And, you know, there's just some more refinement to get there. But I want to close this podcast out real quick. Unless you have any other guys you want to highlight here, I want to close this podcast out with a guy that I don't know how I forgot to talk about, because we both have a true affinity for him, but Joey Cantillo. Joey Cantillo was a guy this season that blew up, dominated the Midwest League. I mean, the guy was incredible in the Midwest League this year. Went up to the California League, had one bad start, but outside of that, he was pretty solid. Got shut down due to innings limitations, but this is a guy that the Padres signed for about $350K out of Hawaii in 2017. He was a 16th round pick, foregoed his Kentucky commitment. I think he was 17 years old when he got drafted, and now he's going to be in Lake Elsinore all of next season. This is a guy that I legitimately think I have him right now at 13 in my prospects live list. I don't think it's a stretch to say that come next year in July, he's a top 100 prospect. So give me your thoughts on Joey Cantillo, and sell the listeners of this podcast on why they should be all in on Joey Cantillo.
Yeah, I mean, I had him actually in my top 10 for the Brewers, or for the Padres. I don't even know where the Brewers came from. I don't know. He's not on the Brewers. But I had him in my Padres top 10 right around mid-season, honestly. I'm a big fan of what he can do. He's got good size. I think he's 6'4", 6'3", 6'4", upwards of 215, I think. And, you know, I just really love what he can do. He's got a nice changeup. I think he's working on his curveball. But, you know, he, in my mind, if I'm going to bring my Tigers into this, and Tarik Skubal, who is a top 100 prospect on some lists, were kind of together in my mind, and I don't know why, but I think they were just both guys in the system who I thought were very underrated, and it's good to see both of them, you know, climbing up. Skubal's shot up. I mean, he was ridiculous this year, but Cantillo's working his way up there, and I still see people who think that he's got a long relief, back-end kind of future. I think he could be a solid number three starter.
Yes.
I'm very much in on Cantillo.
So on my top 30 list over at Prospect Live for the Padres list, I actually wrote, yeah, his ceiling is a solid number three guy. And I think what a lot of people are hesitant about is to, you know, putting him up there is the fastball velocity, right? Because this is a guy who's always been like 87 to 89, occasional 90. But last year in June or July, I saw two starts of his where he was 92, 94. And he's been very open about training and working hard. He's adamant on throwing harder because he knows that that's what's holding him back. You mentioned the changeup. I think that his changeup is a really good pitch. I think it's flashed above average, and it could be plus by the time he's, you know, 24, 25 years old. This is a guy who's still 19, going to be 20 all of next year. His changeup comes out literally identical to his fastball. If you overlay them, arm slot and everything, it is nearly identical. And I just love when lefties can throw changeups for some reason, because I think that a lefty that has a really good changeup is just so much cooler than a lefty that doesn't. The curveball is on its way. Yeah, it's probably average right now, but he's definitely flashed it to be pretty solid. But I love Joey Cantillo. If that fastball gets up to 92, 94, you have a guy with a starter's frame who can add more muscle. He's pretty lean despite being 6'4", 215. It's an uncomfortable at-bat because of how lanky and long he is. He creates good extension downhill, and definitely a guy that I think is going to shoot up lists if he dominates Lake Elsinore, or even has a solid outing at Lake Elsinore like he did the Midwest League. It's a guy who I legitimately think will be a top 100 prospect by the time we get to July. But yeah, dude, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. I definitely appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come out here and talk some Padres prospects. It was a fun time. Hopefully we can do this again, but I just really appreciate you coming on here.
I appreciate you having me. I always love doing these things, and usually I don't sound, like I'm, extremely sick, so I appreciate you letting me on anyway.
Yeah, for sure, man. But we're going to wrap this thing up here, so thanks everyone for listening. This will probably drop, when you listen to this, it's going to be Thursday. So, thanks for listening, and have a good one.